think it's supposed to get worse.
Yep.
Yes.
Covers 1/3 of the American continent.
What else? It's so warm in Australia. It's about 40 degrees.
I think we are the warmest.
Okay, are we ready to get going? I see Warren's just supplied himself with a very strong coffee by the look of it to keep awake.
Tom's doing the same, but why don't we get started?
So, Lily, I think you're going to take us through this paper.
Yes, I have the honor of doing this paper. 2 weeks ago, the boards discussed a staff summary of the comment letters. One of the key issues that came up from the staff summary was the definition of a lease. The boards had an education session on this issue 2 weeks ago, too. And in that session, the boards discussed how to differentiate between services and leases. The boards in that session also noted that elements where services are integral to a lease could result in different subsequent measurement results. But that's not the purpose of this paper. The purpose of this paper is to discuss what are the factors or the principles to differentiate between a service and a lease. This is key and it's critical to this issue, to this project and to the issue that we need to discuss today. What we are asking today to the boards are not whether it's something a lease or a not, but what we really want to know are what are the factors that would tip you to determine whether something is a lease or something is a service. So that's why we made it very clear, it's what the factors, not whether something's a lease or not. And our focus when we were deliberating this paper or developing the examples was to address the main concerns that were raised by respondents. They broadly agreed with the specified asset approach and the control to right of use approach. But there were some concerns on how do we apply some of those principles. And these concerns are explained in paragraphs 15 and 17 in your memo, where how do you differentiate whether can a supplier substitute the assets used to fulfill a contract? Is a specified asset a component? And what if the supplier provides additional services? So for today, we're going to discuss the examples in this paper in a couple of chunks. We're going to start off with examples one, the initial fact pattern, A and B first. Then we'll ask the boards to discuss that issue. Then we'll discuss example 1C separately, D and E in a separate chunk, and then example 2 in a separate chunk. For each example, we have applied the specified asset and the control of the right of use criterion or principles. So we'll start off with example, the first chunk, examples 1, fact patterns A and B, and the staff have analyzed them, and do the boards have any disagreement with the staff analysis on the specified asset criterion or the control to the right to use the specified asset criterion?
Okay, Leslie, should we take first go at this here?
Yes, please.
Okay, so just one, the basic fact pattern, A and B, let's not stray beyond that, and staff want to know whether you agree with their analysis. So, comments in London? Pat.
Overall, I like the direction that the staff is developing in this paper. I think it addresses a critical concern that I think perhaps was not fully developed in our ED, and we received many comments that we needed to articulate more clearly or specifically, no pun intended there, that the guidance in 0108 and in IFRIC 4 needed to be clarified. And I think the reason it needs to be clarified is because to the extent that we are too prescriptive, then it's going to be very easy to structure accounting outcomes here to avoid the capitalization of lease obligations. So the guidance that I see you developing here around specified asset and control, I think, is the right direction. For the most part, the examples, actually in all cases, the examples that you've laid out in the what-if scenarios are ones that I come to the same conclusion that I believe you're pointing us to. So I say a job well done. I like where we're going here. I think it strikes a reasonable balance between trying to get things on the balance sheet and going too far with capitalizing quote-unquote executory contracts, which is an issue we'll deal with, you know, down the road.
Okay, anybody else here? Warren Tatsumi. Warren, do you want to comment?
Yeah, I'm happy with the general direction. I think it's helpful. My reactions relate to both of these examples, so just let me give you those very briefly. I think it's helpful, but I think we have to keep reminding ourselves of what the basic question is we're asking, and that is, who controls the asset? Who has the ability to benefit from the asset's use, and who can deny or regulate the use of others of that asset? And I think looking at what the supplier can or can't do in terms of substitution, provision of services and so on is helpful. But I think we also need to provide some balance here, and I think it's just as important, if not more important, to also focus on what it is the lessee, potential lessee, can do. For example, can the lessee sublet in some of these circumstances? Can the lessee have the services that are potentially provided by the supplier provided by some other party? So I think it's helpful, but I think we need to be careful that we don't overemphasize what it is the supplier can and can't do. But it's important to also look at more closely at exactly what rights the lessee has, or potential lessee.
It's Warren Tatsumi.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. So I have some trouble with the analysis in here, A and B, especially the paragraph 21 says the existence of this substitution requirement does not substantially affect the dependency that the customer has upon the 10 rail cars to fulfill the arrangement, blah, blah. So that word dependency, I have the trouble how to understand that dependency. I think, say, what the lessee would like to have here is not specific 10 rail cars. I think that the capacity of the 10 rail cars are most important, it seems to me. So in that sense, I think that some, say, the word independency indicate to me that my understanding is that what the lessee would like to have is just a capacity 10 rail cars could provide to the lessees. So just a specific, say, identification 10 cars is not important in here, just a formality of the contract or some other things. So it seems to me the substance in here is just to get the capacity of the 10 rail cars, it seems to me. So from that point of view, I think that the analysis made by staff is not enough, and we need more, analysis of what it means in the dependency, or say just in paragraph 23, just the use of the 10 rail cars, or there's no specific identification. The meaning of these two paragraphs should be more clearly articulated, it seems to me.
Okay, should we try the phones, John?
Generally in support of the direction they're going in, I had a little trouble with some of the examples. Paragraph 23, where the supplier can substitute rail cars anytime, any reason, without prior consent, that one is troubling because it sounds like customer doesn't control. It also seemed that I'd want to know more. Why would the customer allow this? And it just, maybe if I understood that, I could get over the concern I had with it. But it just seemed that there isn't control there. Where's D?
John, should we come back to you while you're trying to locate the place?
On E, paragraph 29.
John, we're not going on to that just yet. We're just trying to stick with the first three examples, but we'll come back to you later.
I'm fine so far then.
Okay.
Yeah, I like the direction the staff is going. I just wanted to ask a question because the analysis is based on the paragraphs 11 to 18, and I want to go back to paragraph 13 that the staff has brought up in the analysis, and just to understand, in the paragraph 13, for the specified asset to be substantive, we think that the purchaser depends on the specified asset to fulfill the contract. For the purchaser to depend on the specified asset, the purchaser should not be indifferent to the type of asset identified in the arrangement. I don't know what it means because my initial immediate thought was, what does it mean to a photocopier? Is the staff saying that by this wording that a photocopier machine is not substantive, that is put in the hallway of any offices? Is that what the staff is intending, or what is the staff intending by saying that, the second sentence in para 13?
Am I on?
Yeah, okay.
Okay. PK, I think if someone really cares about the asset, you would not be indifferent to the type of asset identified. So in regards to the photocopy machine down the hall, if I actually want the type of services and I really care what type of machine it is, then yes, it could be the purchaser would want to control what the asset is, and it would want to determine what type of specified asset it is. It would specify what type of asset it would want it to be in the contract.
So if I say that, hey, Lily, you are the supplier, I don't care if it's a Xerox machine or a Konica or Minolta or whatever it is, just put a machine which photocopies, and there is a standard machines available in the marketplace. Most of them do back-to-back, most of them staple, so I don't even need to specify. If I leave it at that point, because the industry has come to a certain level that I'm happy with that, does it mean it's not a substantive asset then? Because I'm seeing a lot of structuring opportunities by that. I'm not trying to inherit John Smith's legacy here, but I'm just trying to say that we can get away a lot of issues out of this by this wording. And
that's,
if that is the intention, that's fine. I just want to make sure that is the intention.
That's why we are having this session here. We want to explore the board's where you think are the factors that would tip you towards one area to another. Do you think whether the purchaser cares, to put it bluntly, how much do they care what the asset is, what the underlying asset that's what we want to explore with the boards at this session.
Okay.
And it sounds like for you, you may care.
Yep.
Okay, David and Damara.
Thanks, Steve. We've got two critical lines to draw in this particular standard. The first is service versus lease, and the second one, if we stay where we ended up last time, is the difference between a purchase lease and, if I could call it, an operating purchase lease, which is the one we talked about, maybe having a straight line in the P&L account. I'm just wondering if we're slightly getting confused between the two. I'm slightly nervous in the first one. In A, where we can withdraw the asset and put another one in while it's being serviced. Well, that doesn't sound like a purchase lease for a start. Now, maybe that's what we're trying to do here, is distinguish between a service lease, if I could call it that, which is can be on balance sheet but straight-lined, and a purchase lease. And I started having problems with it because when you went on to C, the trouble is I'm going to have to leave in a quarter of an hour, Steve, sing for my supper. But the C was you only replace it occasionally. That, again, doesn't sound too much like a purchase lease to me. You don't sort of get rid of aircraft you've got for 20 years or something like that. I just think we have to look at this slightly more carefully. We've got two lines. The A could well be a service lease and straight line it. And probably I'm more inclined to say, yes, it is a lease rather than a service. But I think that's a line that doesn't come out quite clearly in this paper. I know it's not trying necessarily to do that, but that's where I'm having problems. You know, when do I cross the line from a service lease to a service? And that isn't here. It would almost be better if I said, this lot are all purchase leases, forget them. Now let's look at the other lines between the service lease and the actual service itself.
Can we ask the staff to clarify, were you intending to have us discuss both of those cuts today or only the cut between whether the overall arrangement is a service or a lease? And then we can talk later about what kind of lease.
I don't even know if we're trying to get to the point whether something's a service or a lease yet, because there's a lot of aspects of whether something's a service or a lease. I think we're trying to focus in on two specific areas. One, what do we mean by specified asset? Does it have to be very specific, which I think is what Tatsumi is saying. He tends to leave more something around very specific with a serial number, or could be something more general, such as maybe it's just a certain model of a copier, for example. So we're trying to identify what you guys are thinking about when you're thinking about specified asset. So that's number one. And then number two is around the whole control notion and when you control. So we're trying to flesh those areas out more, and we're not really getting into the details of whether something's a service or a lease. Now, this is going to help us get to that point, but we're not really trying to do that yet. And I think David's even taken another step to determine, okay, if you determine it's a lease, is it a purchase lease or a service lease, as he's calling it.
Okay.
And that's to me, that's two steps removed from what we're trying to do today.
Okay, David, if you're leaving shortly, any other comments you want to make?
Well, I didn't pick up that's what we're trying to do in this paper, quite frankly. I thought we were trying to distinguish whether they're leases or not, but I do agree that the specificity is going to be a key issue, because in A, it clearly doesn't matter that much, nor does it matter if it's in B, but it does in B, because nobody else is allowed to use these things. So, I'm just slightly concerned. I'm not clear on exactly where we're heading in this one.
I mean, my interpretation is that specified asset and control are critical elements in deciding whether it's a service or lease. So you want to identify whether people agree with your analysis. I mean, that is getting pretty close to whether they're saying it's a lease or a service. So although Kevin says that's not the objective, I mean, it is nearly there, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. John?
I already gave you my comment. You want more?
Sorry. Amara, sorry.
Yeah. Like some, I agree with the overall, and I support the overall direction of the paper. I had some my issues with this paper is that I try to identify the critical elements, as you mentioned, about the specified asset and the right to control the use of the asset. And for me, I would like, if we are going to explore using examples, I would prefer a more detailed examples, actually, to because sometimes I feel that there could be, that we might have aspects that are missing for us to understand completely the leasing arrangement as it is. But
okay,
you know,
well,
I do support the direction that the staff is trying to explore this.
Okay, well, I have the same view. I support the direction and certainly the analysis that you've made in these three cases. So should we turn it over to the FASB, Leslie?
Okay, thank you. Comments? Tom?
I support the general direction of what the staff's doing here. And to make a broad brush statement, I agree with virtually all your conclusions about what's a lease and what's not a lease.
Okay, Larry?
Within this memo. I think, though, that the trouble that applying this is it's going to be very dependent on very specific wording. And what I don't see in the analysis is the wording that's necessary to achieve the result. Like PK, I don't understand why indifference to the type of asset is a key concept. Now, it might be related to another concept, but I don't understand why that's a driving force. And so while I thought the appendix that you provided in the paper was useful that for me to think about the different criteria, it didn't allow me to come to a conclusion as to exactly which one of those sets of characteristics drive my decisions. And I would have preferred having you go further in carrying through the wording that are in paragraphs 11 through 18 and the concepts you have in the appendix to tell me which words you think are important to come to the conclusions you derived in the examples, and to justify to me which ones are necessary conditions, sufficient conditions, or just extraneous conditions. And I didn't have the capability to do a good job at giving you insight about whether necessary, sufficient, or extraneous at this point in time, other than I know that I like your outcomes. There's one other question I need to ask. Is this the only set of issues we're going to deal with about service versus lease? One thing that's bothering me is the concept that came up in one of the roundtables about whether a cable box should be treated as a lease in a cable television service. And I think the cable box would meet the criterion you have here in this appendix. It's a specified asset. It's under control. But I don't want that necessarily to be a lease if what the cable box is an incidental physical asset that's necessary to deliver the service and doesn't have value separate from the service. And so I just want to put a marker out there that if this is the complete analysis, I don't think we've gone far enough.
And maybe just quickly, we will talk about bundles, which include something that may meet these characteristics for which we may come to a different conclusion as to the outcome of the accounting, but not here.
Okay. Other comments? Mark?
I wanted to commend the staff. I actually thought this analysis was very helpful in teasing out all the different issues, because when I read the paper a couple of weeks ago in preparation for the joint meeting in London, I don't know that I would have ever come to the conclusion that the rail cars were anything other than a transportation service. But what this memo allowed me to do was say, okay, in these circumstances, when it's specified, when it's highly customized, and in 11 through 18, crystallized the continuum, if you will, of when you might consider it a lease versus a service. And so I was, like Tom, able to agree with the answers, at least certainly in the examples that we're talking about now, A and B, with the conclusions. I have the same questions as PK, and trying to then take it to the next step, and we'll get there. I think we're going to have trouble with the component question. But at least so far, I think this really did tease out all the different indicators I would want to see. You know, Tom raised the point about, is there a hierarchy of indicators that might be determinative versus not, or are we going to go with just indicators? And that's another question that we'll have at some time. But I really thought this was helpful in teasing out the different areas.
Others? You guys
go.
I had a question that Tom prompted, which is, after the staff went through this analysis, and I presume you filled out the worksheets at the back, and you've had sort of more time to think about this holistically than we have, were you able to discern that there really were some of the indicators that were driving the analysis, or is this already edited to exclude anything that you thought was extraneous?
I'll take it, and then I'll let David and Lily quickly. But I think we heard a lot of words as we've talked about this issue, whether it's in the roundtables or other places. Capacity, we've heard dependent, all those types of words. And I thought as we continued our analysis, we really drove to, they kind of fall under these two things that were there in EITF 018 and IFRC 4, and then specified asset concept and this control concept. Mm-hmm. So our thinking here, I think, is driven as a result of that, but we still think those are the kind of the two basic tenets of what is a lease. Now, you can get into the squiggly stuff and the spectrums of how specific is the asset, and that's what makes it hard to then draw specific lines, which I think we lean more towards indicators of than those.
Thank you. Back to you.
Yeah, I think maybe the only thing I would add on that is, and maybe this might be the right time to sort of roll into the next pieces of the examples, is that maybe we want to try and sort of tease out, as Kristen said, we probably identify the indicators here, but then it's sort of arrowing in on the specificness of those indicators, and that's what we're going to explore a little bit, I think, as we move in maybe onto 1C now, first of all, where I think Lily will tee up just this notion of substitution, and we wanted to sort of just get some reaction around one or two of the key elements in the fact pattern around substitution here, and just try and explore to what extent a couple of these factors might impact the thinking.
Examples? Okay. Right. Example C explores the fact that if freight supplier has substituted the rail cars before but rarely does, would that change your mind? Right. And then we also ask the boards in paragraph 28, what would happen if the supplier actually has 20 rail cars? What happens if the supplier actually have 20,000 rail cars? Would that change your mind? What type of evidence would you need to determine whether something is whether the customer actually has a specified asset or does not have a specified asset? So that's the thing that we want to ask for this fact pattern.
And I think this feeds off of one or two comments made earlier. For example, Tatsumi saying that maybe we're thinking of this as the capacity of rail cars. Okay, so the substitution at some point sort of move you away from the notion that the capacity is specified well enough.
And where PK,
or alternatively, where PK mentioned this sort of idea of indifference. And at what point, is there a point here on the substitution where we've used the term indifference, but what we're trying to get at there is that the asset is interchangeable enough that the customer is maybe further removed from having a specified asset here. And those are a couple of the concepts here we're looking to challenge in this example.
Okay, thanks. Leslie, would you like to go first on this one?
Sure. Any thoughts on C? Russ?
I thought C. I would have said C is still a lease, but I interpret specified asset to be a type of asset, not a specific serial number. So I would disagree with Tatsumi. I understand the point of it being a specific serial number.
And I totally agree with Sparrow. Yeah. I agree it's a lease. I think what helps me a lot about it is that they've got full control over the operations and limiting access to others for a particular type of car. And so they're not sharing it with anyone else. It doesn't matter whether it could be substituted for me. That makes it a lease. It's still a specified asset with full control.
I agree. Back to you.
Okay, thanks. John, you wanted to talk about this one, I think.
D.
This is C.
Paragraph 24.
I think you were just about to go to paragraph 28 earlier, which is part of C.
I'm okay with this one.
He's okay with the staff analysis. Yeah,
you're okay with the staff analysis.
Yep.
All right, so comments in London or on video? Pat first.
Yeah, I would disagree with Tatsumi as well here and view scenario C as a lease, particularly in my mind, I would hang weight on the fact that notwithstanding the freight supplier's right to be able to substitute assets, the fact that that's an event that occurs relatively infrequently, I don't think is something, therefore, we should assign a lot of weight to. And frankly, if they were to do it very frequently, I don't think the customer probably would enter into this kind of an arrangement if they had a dependence on these rail cars. You're making a different economic decision at that point in time. You know, if you just need something for short periods of time, you don't really care whether it's substituted or not frequently. So I would clearly categorize this in the lease category.
Okay. Thanks, Paul.
I would also classify C as a lease. To me, a lease must relate to a specific physical asset, and that's why I think intangibles are out for the moment. I mean, we need to deal with them, but it's got to be a specific physical asset. The fact that substitution is permitted does not change my mind that it's a lease, as long as it's the substitution of an identical, or you say in your criteria, equivalent asset. Control is the key. You know, do we control that asset? And when we get to the next example, you talk about when we're providing, somebody else is providing the driver. That's an issue for whether we control. I know I'm jumping the gun a bit, but just to mention components, because as I say that I think you've got to have a physical asset that you control, when I look at components, I think there are multiple kinds of components. You could have a component that is a physical component, a time component, or a capacity component. And I get different answers on those. I get that if it's a physical component or even a time component, 5 years on two floors of a building, I think you can have a lease of that. But I'm not sure if I'm you have an example, your last one, I think, so much throughput in a pipeline, but or maybe it was rail cars, but you only get so much capacity. I don't think that's a lease. So for me, a specified physical asset is a condition for a lease, substitution of an identical or equivalent asset. But once, like maybe it was Tatsumi, once we start talking about capacity, then I drop off from it being a lease. But when I get to components, again, I have to look at a physical asset. It could be a physical or time component, but not a capacity component.
Okay, well, we'll come back to capacity shortly. Weigrin?
This is exactly what I want to ask. You know, we start with full capacity. How about, you know, we only rent partial of it, a part of it, and let's assume accompanied by a car, and we account for the purchase and lease a car for a whole day, a whole period, we'll say the lease. But if lease 1 hour a day, and you can substitute whether we say it still lease or not. I think it's related to timing and space and other possible alternatives related to the components of capacity.
But Wei Gui, you think that in this particular example...
Well, capacity, no problem.
Okay, so it's a specified asset.
Yes.
Right.
PK?
I am fine with the analysis.
Okay, thanks. Warren?
I'm fine with the analysis. I disagree with Paul in terms of capacity, but we're going to come to that in a moment. I think it's important to understand the way in which these factors or principles relate. Paul said it, that control's the key, and it is. It's who can benefit from the asset, as I said before, or who can deny or regulate the use of others. When we talk about specified or identifiable asset, we're talking about what it is that you actually control and what is the right of use that you actually have. And in C, it seems to me that there is clearly an asset, something of benefit, to which I have a right, and I can direct what I do with that. The fact that it can be substituted, to me, does not change the nature of the transaction, and that is that I have actually acquired a right of use, and I can identify what it is I've acquired. So I support C, the staff's analysis of C as a lease.
Ms. Warren, taxi me.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. So I'm a little bit surprised my name has been cited, and I'm supporting the, say my capacity notion is not related to the lease, I think, but I think there must be some misunderstanding, I think. I try to, understand from A to C as a lease, and my trouble in here is sort of the physical rail cars are indifferent, even though the contract itself specify the certain rail cars, but I think the from A to C, what indicates to me is something else, not the specified rail cars. So then what I would like to understand, what is the substance? And I think the identifiable asset must be the capacity which is provided by rail cars. So I try to understand the identifiable asset must be the sort of the capacity provided by the rail cars. So then I have a trouble with the, that capacity is a sort of tangible asset or intangible asset. So, but that is not the substance in here. But my thinking is if I understand the substance of the contract is the lessee would like to have the sort of the capacity which is contained in the 10 rail cars, and that capacity is now leased leased to the lessees, then I can understand all the A to C in consistent ways. So that is my understanding, and it seems to me the paragraph 26 is, it seems to me, talking about what I have in mind in a little bit similar way, but I do not like the providing transportation service. I do not like the last word of that one. So I think that the substance is to provide capacity which is contained in the 10 cars. That is my views. And I support the from 1A to C should be treated as this.
Right. There you go. Paul and Ray Grow here, the ones to come in. Was that you, John?
Not me, no.
Okay. Paul?
I also went down the route of thinking that the right of use really is the capacity, but then I get to example E, where we have a contract for the capacity.
Okay, we're coming on to that in a second.
But Tatsumi is saying it really leads him on C to say you have a lease. Well, I get to a lease also on C, but then I drop off. I'm anxious to hear when we get to E whether Tatsumi thinks we have a lease or just an executory contract. I acknowledge we have got to deal with executory contracts in IFRSs, but we got a project here on leases.
Okay, I promise I'll ask Tatsumi first in that case. Very great.
Now, my understanding is specified assets. We start with a car with a particular number. And the next one, we discuss about substitutions. I will accept, you know, you can, the supplier can provide the cars with similar quality features, but as to, you know, which one is not so important. But I will not go too far. For example, you can come here 10 or 20 long cars, capacity, original definition like this. But later on, you come to my home or my companies with another type of cars, I will not accept. Now, we can discuss, but, you know, specificity, I think, is still important. Otherwise, we will mingle pure service contracts with a pure lease or purchase contract.
Okay, well, it looks like you're keeping us reasonably well on board for the first part of this. Leslie, do you want to add anything before we go on to the next part?
If I could just add, I think the paragraph 28 indicators are helpful here, because I can sort of see both ways, as a lease or as a service. If there's 2,000 rail cars that exist, and you're just picking 10 out of the 2,000, I might think a little bit differently about it. I might think that really you've got, you know, more of a service-like, where you're just you're really just trying to get transportation services, and you are caught at sort of indifferent. If there are only 20 and they're fairly more customized, then maybe I'm still on board with the lease. But I think the 28 indicators are important.
I consider this a specified asset, not just control, in part because to me it isn't just capacity. If it was capacity for 10 rail cars and all I wanted is transportation to be able to move goods with that volume, someone could provide that by boat, by air, by train, a whole bunch of different sorts of ways. This is a specified asset to me because it says I'm going to do the. I can decide how to. I've decided to transport by using a specified asset, a train car, of a specified size that will constrain how I can stack things and what I can put into it. And it is a homogeneous. Train cars are sort of very replaceable. So the substitution there still allows me to do train. It still tries to do the same size. And 10 units of the same size, not the total capacity of that size, that becomes a specified asset for me.
So, Tom, I had a question with regards to the way we set up example C. The last sentence says the freight supplier has substituted the rail cars before, but this only occurs rarely. What if it said this occurs fairly frequently? Would you have a different view?
I probably would not have a different view as long as it did not disrupt my continued control and access to do my shipping by rail in that size quantity over time, because I view those cars as being replaceable, relatively homogeneous. Now, if you told me you substituted frequently and you went from cars of this size to cars 20 times the size, that might really change my ability to do the shipping. So there's some homogeneity that's helping me think about this more than the frequency.
I agree with Tom, and I also, I guess I find the indicator in paragraph 28A as to the number of cars available, that does not influence my thinking at all. As a matter of fact, I don't know why it is an indicator, and I'm a little bit concerned about, gee, what would happen now? I could have the exact same economic arrangement, but might get different outcomes if I dealt with somebody with just a few rail cars versus a significant number of rail cars. So I didn't see that that criteria, that indicator, helped me at all. And it's exactly for the reasons Tom cited, and that is I'm looking at this as the availability of rail cars, and to Mike's question, about what if they do it frequently, I don't care as long as they call me up ahead of time and say, is it all right if we replace rail car A with rail car B? And I say, yep, that's not a problem.
So basically, so long as it's not disruptive to your business, whereas if they kept changing out the same model of photocopier up on the fifth floor, they did it every week, it'd probably be disruptive. So yeah, you'd say that's different from this.
Okay. Disruption has to do with control.
That's what, okay.
Where would you come out on C, because it says it can do it without prior consent for any reason?
Well, I mean, if I'm using those rail cars as, people use rail cars for things other than just transportation. They use it for storage in their facilities as well. And if the thing's full and they want to swap it out, then I have difficulty with that. And I don't think it's a, I don't think it's something that would come up in practice much. So
the facts in C also said that what they can substitute is something with the same specifications. So whatever they substitute is going to meet your needs.
Yeah, but John was saying, I think he was focusing on whenever.
I was focusing on your comment with they're going to give me a call and agree to it. Clearly, you got control there. But when I looked at C, I wasn't sure why you would agree to that.
I understand your point, John.
I could get there because you bothered to be specific in the contract about what's going to be acceptable ahead of time, so you don't need prior consent.
I'm assuming when they substitute that out, even if the car is full, they come in and they will take the goods out, put it in a new car. I don't get disrupted.
I think we're good here.
I have a question for the staff, and it's a clarification around this topic of specified asset. And we've been debating it. People have expressed their views as to which side of the issue they're on, but we, I think, are saying that we're not restricting the definition to a specific asset. So if a contract doesn't necessarily identify a unique asset, a unique serial number, and, therefore it's not a lease. So essentially what we're saying is a specified type of asset. Is that correct? It's a category?
It's a category. I think when we were thinking through these examples, I think we used the term functionality was raised in terms of there's enough description of what benefit you need to get from the asset. So the asset, so in the rail cars example, color may not impact your choice on whether this is a specified asset or not, but the size, being able to transport the type of freight is going to be important to you if you specify that in the contract. And that, so we talked about functionality or type, yes.
So I guess I'm just asking whether or not the understanding of our standard would be enhanced if we use that phrase or that label here, just to make sure that we are stepping away from what I think was the interpretation of 01, 08, or IFRIC 4, and what is the preference of many, many commentators on this project, that we're not being that prescriptive or restrictive in our definition.
And that's something that we have to test when we go out, and once the boards have agreed to certain words and what we mean by specified asset, and that's something we'll have to test when we go out.
Because as Tatsumi said, if he feels he was misunderstood, then I'm sure other people may feel the same way. And I think that might be a way to get that message over.
Yeah, I'd agree. And the other one that was interesting, just sitting back, reflecting on the discussion there, was at the moment, you know, the notion around substitutability is more built into specified asset language at the moment, whereas the discussion we've had maybe hinted that the substitutability gets into more of the control of the asset. So, you know, that was just something I heard that we were sort of reflecting on a little bit as we went through these as well. I wonder, maybe Lily,
can I make a comment, Steve?
Go ahead, Warren.
Yeah, just picking up on something that Tom said when he was referring to capacity. I understand the point he made, but when I mention capacity, and I think, Pat, you've just made this point, it's the capacity provided by the specified asset, and it does turn on the nature of the asset. I mean, you might use functionality. Like Larry, 28A has no impact at all on the way I would react to the examples that you've given and the application of the indicators. To me, it's irrelevant, and it's just not operational. What's a big number? Is it 2,000? Is it 200? Is it 500? It's totally irrelevant to what really is the focus, must be the focus of the analysis, and that is being able to identify that which you have a right of use in relation to, and that you get benefits from.
Okay, I'd like to get on to D and E, so I want to spend plenty of time on that. But Wade Gray, do you want last comment on this?
My understanding is the number available not so important. The importance is the in terms of quality, in terms of quantity, features should be the same. And staff in the past used the example like you lease a photocopy machine, and whether it's black or color, whether have the sorting functions or stepping functions, all these kind of we call qualitative features. And quantitative means, you know, you bring photocopy machines, but, you know, normal your out will be about 1,000 pages a day, but quality is so lower, you cannot print out 1,000. I don't think will meet the definition of specificity. And so both the quantitative features should be the same. Whether it is exactly the same, I don't think so. Just like Pat said, or somebody said, you know, the color slightly different or a little bit elder or not important.
Okay, let's go on to D and E, shall we?
Okay, yes, thank you. In examples D and E, unlike the previous examples, this time the staff analysis, we thought that the freight supplier actually controls the underlying asset. So it does not need the specified asset and the control of the right to use criteria. You've seen in example two, it's very similar to what we have in the initial fact pattern, but this time is the we think that the customer has left, does not control it. And similarly, we think in example fact pattern E, the freight supplier is the one who controls everything. What the customer has done is, to put it bluntly, it has outsourced some form of service to the freight supplier to have some form of service for the freight supplier to meet. And therefore, we think in those two fact patterns, which are very similar, the customer does not have a specified asset and does not control the right to use the rail cars.
Okay, should we try this one here first then, Paul?
I agree with the staff analysis in E, but I do not agree in D. I don't think I agree with D, because in D, we do control certain cars. Naturally, when you lease rail cars, you expect the railroad to provide the engine and pull your cars. You don't just want those cars. So I'm not troubled by the fact that there's a driver and an engine pulling the cars that we're leasing so that it then is not a lease. I'm not troubled by the fact that the supplier, the lessor, instructs the driver exactly when to depart the train, pull the train out. We direct the lessor when freight is to be transported and between which destinations using our cars. So I conclude, at least for now, I'm hedging slightly because this, I think, D is the grayest area, but I think D is a lease. E is purely outsourcing of capacity to me, and so I think that is a service contract.
Okay, thanks, Tatsim. I promised that I'd come to you first this time, didn't I?
Thank you, Steve. So I have to say, I do not think that the D and E is the same. That is my basic troubles. So as Paul pointed out, it seems to me that D is still focused on rail cars, I think. So as long as we focus on rail cars, whether rail cars, say, as a lessee, whether I rent, say, rail cars, and whether it's a sort of the lease or not, is irrelevant to whether the supplier provide the driver or engines, and also that it's irrelevant that whether other parties' rail cars are connected to that rail cars or not. I think still D is focused on whether this rail cars are leased or not. So from that point of view, I'm not quite sure. The information is not well provided. But in case of E, I think, it's just talking about, how the transportation service is provided or not, it seems to me. So from my point of view, E is clearly, it's providing the transportation service, I think. And say just the focus is changed in case of E, and E is just talking about how my goods should be transported from place A to place B or not. So it seems to me that the E is totally different from the issues which we discussed in A and D. So it seems to me it's very similar to the time charter or wet lease, and I think it seems to me it, say, as a lessee, I have a customer has no right or to use the rail cars or something. So it seems to me it's a providing service. So I wonder why E is provided here as part of the lease transaction. So it's a totally change in the story, it seems to me.
Okay, thanks, Warren.
I have the same reaction as Paul and Tatsumi. I think D actually is a lease, and I think there is a specified asset, and it's the freight cars. And it comes back to the point that I made right at the outset about how this is sort of focusing on in large part what the supplier can and can't do, and it doesn't really drill down to what rights the lessee might have. So in example D, it could be that the lessee purchaser is able to have others provide the services to provide the drivers and engines. It could be that the lessee has the right to sublet the cars and the services being provided by the freight supplier and so on. It seems to me that there is an identifiable specified asset. It is
a capacity that's being provided, and you control it, and you're getting the benefit from it. When you go over to E, I don't think you can reach that same conclusion, and in fact, it could be that the supplier could decide under the arrangement to provide a freight services in a different form, not necessarily rail cars, provided that the goods are transported from point A to point B. The information you've given in E, I don't believe I could come to a conclusion that there is a specified or identifiable asset in that circumstance.
Excuse me, Kristen wants to get in. I just wanted to ask one question, which is a tendency that we had here, and that is we all lean to talking about the lessee in these arrangements. So I just would ask if you might think about it differently at the lessor. And so the lessor in this freight supplier arrangement, would you come to a similar conclusion? Just to ask that question in D. D and E. I think E is easier, but thank you.
Thanks. PK?
You know, I come from a different angle on this. In essence, I hear what Tatsumi said. For him, E is entirely different from D. But given the fact patterns between D and E, as given in these examples, I think most of the contracts will be structured as E. And, you know, you will give the rolling stock, which is the freight cars, and people will load them as and when they feel they are finished with their goods, and we don't know what time, how long those rail cars are going to be there. Most of the rail cars are interchangeable with the size and all that stuff. So I see the D and E not to be, it's be semantics, to be honest. So I see the reasoning why the staff came to D and E, but is that what we want to get at? That's the point I don't understand, because you can easily get to all deals to be structured in a fashion where they will end up not to be on the balance sheet.
Thanks, PK. John?
I agree in D with others who thought that there is a lease here. It just seemed to me that the customer can do what it wants with those cars and can decide to what extent it wants them moved. E was more troublesome. I'd want more information, I think. I could argue it both ways depending on how the thing was priced, what I did with the cars in the intervening period. It seems to me that I could want the goods transported to another place. What happens after they're transported? Is it still my car? I wanted more information on E.
There are no cars in E, John. I don't see any cars in E at all.
What are they being transported in?
It says you will get the equivalent capacity. 10 cars, but if the contractor chooses to ship
cars,
in a truck,
I would agree it's service. I assume that there was a car on my premises and there was a timetable for me to get it loaded and moved.
Doesn't say that. I don't see that.
Is a base supplier is a.
What's the third paragraph say? Freight supplier provides rail car.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they provided just when I call up to move them. Or are they provided and I've got control over them until, and I've specified a timetable when I'm going to deliver? And what happens after I deliver? Is it no longer my car? So I just wanted more information.
Hey, Steve, can I come in?
Let me just, Pat's been waiting. Come in first.
Yeah. My conclusion was that Echo was a service. And D was also a service, although that gave me a little bit of angst, because the model that I guess I'm interpreting here, and the one I would like to see, and maybe this is too prescriptive, is where a customer lessee has unrestricted use of an asset to direct it for its intended purpose or functionality, clearly I could categorize that as a lease arrangement. On the other end of the spectrum, we talk about turnkey type of operations. We've had examples around the board here of wet leases. We've had the apartment, the corporate apartment that has all kinds of bells and whistles, as opposed to the apartment that has a hardwood floor and white walls, and so on, where we go to the turnkey, where essentially we're taking the discretion from the customer lessee out of how it may use the underlying thing for its intended purpose. It starts to feel more like there's heavily embedded services, or the whole thing is a service. And we're going to come to that issue. But I think that's kind of the two ends of the spectrum. So if we were to write a principle here that said, unless the lessee had unrestricted rights of use for the underlying thing, then we would categorize that an asset. I see, what some of the board members here are arguing in terms of why this D could be a lease. I understand that there are elements of this type of arrangement that do look and smell like a lease, but in this example, it doesn't appear as if the customer, the lessee, has total unrestricted use of those rail cars. And so that's what I'm hanging my hat on. But I have another alternative view when we get to the discussion of arrangements that have components of services and leases. So that's the bright line I would draw. Unless it's unrestricted, then I would call it a service.
Right. Yeah. In this case, why? In this case, why you say the lessee not totally? You just deny your.
Because to use these rail cars for their intended purpose, I would say I would have to have an engine, and I would have the right to run those rail cars on a track, when I want to. Just like if you put a copier in my office, I can use it when I want to, and I can buy paper and toner for it when I want to. But when I have to be bound by the terms of its use, I don't have the quote-unquote quiet enjoyment of its use, but those terms are being dictated to me. It smells as if it's either got heavy service elements to it or it's a service in its entirety.
You induce me to answer the question I just want to ask. When we start bringing us these cases, I think there are some presumptions. First, they are non-cancelable. Secondly, we cannot distinguish which part. This is quite important. In this case, if the lessee can negotiate a price with the lessor separately, the cars and the engines, and this is one story. Another story is they're mingled together. I think the concern from Pat is if they are mingled together, you will feel the transaction should be considered as service rather than lease. But if you can clearly separate, what's your opinion?
Well, if we go down the path of saying one must bifurcate the service elements, account for them off balance sheet, and account for the underlying thing on balance sheet, I could accept that. That wouldn't trouble me. But if you're looking for guidance on how to categorize arrangements into one camp or the other, then I would say the more indicia of a lack of or absence of unrestricted control, the more I would say that it argues for a service. And it's a question of, you know, what side do you come down on that? I mean, one of the principles that we could introduce into this paper, which has been thrown out or discussed at roundtables, workshops, is this notion of assessing what's the predominant element of the contract. And some people said, take a look at what each of these elements would cost if you went out and bought them discreetly. And if the thing that you are buying discreetly is more of the service than, you know, treated as a service arrangement, somebody, I think Tom Linsmeyer, threw out the notion of a cable company with a cable TV box for a 24-month contract. Clearly, what are you buying there? It's mostly the service, the signal. It's not the box itself. You could throw out that principle and say, we're always going to bifurcate, so irrespective of how insignificant, you know, the underlying component is or how insignificant the service element is, we're always going to bifurcate. And I guess that could solve the problem and use fair value as a basis on doing that. And so we don't have this challenge of defining.
Okay, I think we should put this back to FASB. I'm not sure we've reached a conclusion on D between us. My view is that E is clearly a service. D I actually had down as a service when I read it, and it was partly for the reasons that the staff have put down here in terms of control, but also Pat said that there were heavily embedded services in this whole arrangement, and I know that's not what we're talking about here, but that's what persuaded me that it was a service. But that makes it that we're evenly split on D. So over to you, Leslie.
Thank you. Let's see how we are. Anybody want to kick off, Russ?
I think E is clearly a service. I also think I would evaluate D as a service, much to what the staff has done and what Stephen just said, is that I think you have to look at the nature of the arrangement.
Speak up a little, please, Russ.
The nature of the arrangement, the rail cars itself, but while they're important for the transportation, that they will not achieve the customer's objective without the engine and the drivers. Warren, a point I thought you made that's useful is if the facts were different, that is that the customer could choose to have the freight supplier supply the engine and the driver, or they could go and hire that from somebody else. I think I might get a different fact pattern. The way I read this here is that you are required to use the freight supplier's engine. I think that's a critical fact. I think what they're purchasing in this situation is a service. To Kristen's point, from the lessor's perspective, I would evaluate this the same. Both cases, I would say that the lessor is providing a service. I guess I phrased that wrong. I guess the freight supplier is providing a service. A lessor can't. Sorry.
Can I just ask a question? I mean, we're all assuming here that we want to transport these rail cars. What if I want the rail cars just for storage? And I have no intention to ever move them anywhere. Does that change it at all? Because no one in the fact pattern that we say either way. I think people are making assumptions. But what if?
Yeah. We're wondering why you made this arrangement.
Yeah. I mean,
it's done all the time.
So only for storage?
No, it's just that a lot of your rail cars are used for storage.
No, I know, but would you have contracted for a driver and an engine then?
You didn't. I mean, what you're doing is, the way I read D was when you call up freight supplier, you will be billed separately for, you know, taking those rail cars to whatever destination you indicate. I thought there would be a separate charge for that. Now, maybe I read into the example too much.
I think you're right. I think it's a well-taken point, Kevin. I think that, you know, the very first sentence of D is a freight supplier provides the drivers and engines used to move the rail cars between locations. I took that to mean that you're contracting to move things between locations. If you're not, then maybe I would come up with an answer. So I think it's fair.
Yeah, and that's why I think we have to think about, you know, do we want to bifurcate leases from services? And that's why earlier on I said, what we really should focus in on is what's the specified asset and do we control that specified asset? And yes, it does help us get to the leasing decision easier, but I don't always think we could just jump to conclusions all the time that because we have a certain fact pattern here that's all that exists and nothing else exists. as to whether we have a lease or not. Because I actually think we have both a lease and a service in this example. I think we have a lease of the rail cars,
right,
and we have a service for the transportation. Right. And now we could decide whether we want to bifurcate or not. And if we don't want to bifurcate, then we have to figure out what's the predominant, and should we do a predominant service, predominant lease, and how we figure that, we have to come up with some guidance around that. But
so how would you answer E then?
What's E?
The E is the same. Basically, it's the same. Yeah. The only way to fulfill the capacity is a fixed asset.
Yeah, I don't know. I could be leasing some cars in E as well. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's a lot clearer, at least a lot clearer to me in D, that I'm leasing cars and I have a transportation service. It's not as clear in E. But we just need to think about that. Are we going to do bifurcation or not, and how are we going to do that? So I just don't think it's as clear cut as you know, everyone, you know, very definitive. It's A or B. That's why I think there's some, you know, some people think it's a lease and some people think it's a service.
Okay. When I read it, I first thought service, but I think it's because how it was written that I'm only concentrating on the new facts when D's written. If you go back to A, it says, starting with A. And the only difference in what you write in A is that when you do use the cars of transportation, you got to use the rail company to do it. But A says that I have control over 10 cars. No one else can use those cars but me. When they're not being used, they're in my depot, and I'm paying for them. In a sense, D says that the rail company that provides a rail transportation service could never be a lessor. I don't think that's the case. I mean, I start contrasting it. Pat brought up what my concern was, is the cable company circumstance. I think right away when I threw out before the cable box, everybody says specified asset under my control. But we might not want to treat it as a lease because it's so incidental to the service. In this setting, I've got rail cars under my control. I mean, I'm the only one that can use them. They're in my possession, control the whole time. I limit access to others, and I'm getting another service with it. It's just, in this instance, the rail cars are such a big thing related to the transportation. I don't think they're incidental to the transportation, or the issue is going to have to be that we decide. When is it incidental or not? But for me, they seem to be big enough at $50,000 a year for 10 cars that it is a separate leased asset. But I think it's entwined with the decision about what Kevin was talking about. When we have both leases and services from the lessor side, when do we separate those things from both the lessor side, Kristen's point, and then more from the lessee side? Mm-hmm. E, to me, is clearly a service. It starts off with completely a different fact pattern. You know, the lessee does not have the 10 cars. They don't have them in the depot. They don't decide when they're used or not used or for how they're used. What they're doing is the lessee's buying a service from the rail company, and the rail company's deciding how to make it happen. So E's clearly, to me, a service. But D, I think, is going to be in this cable box rail car decision.
Well, I actually think D is the cable box, and I think that the integral nature, I think if you're trying to acquire transportation services, and the mere fact that the rail car is substantially more costly than the cable box, I think in both cases, in one thing I'm trying to provide entertainment services, and the other I'm trying to get transportation services. The mere fact that you cannot move the rail car without the engine is what I focus on. Not the value of the underlying assets.
Doesn't the second last sentence in A bother you, the initial fact pattern? When the rail cars are not in use, they're kept in the customer's depot. So they're not at the rail company's area. They're my cars. They're sitting in my depot for a period of time. When I decide that I want to move something, I ask somebody to come get them from me and transport it.
In my mind, it has to do with the nature of the arrangement and the point of why you're acquiring this activity. I don't think you generally... To Kevin's point about storage, I guess might be a different scenario, but I'm reviewing this as a scenario where you're trying to use the rail car to take some supplies from point A to point B. The mere fact that it's in your depot is it's in your depot, but you're not intending to keep it in the depot for the entire time. Now, if you're intending to keep it in the depot for the entire time, maybe that's a different scenario.
I read A as saying that if I want to keep it in my depot and just store stuff, I can.
Well, if I could jump in there. Trying to compare and contrast D and E with the ones that came before it, I also view E as a service and D as a service. And to try not to change the examples that the staff worked so hard on too much, but I don't know the names of common rail companies, so if I can switch it to trucks. You know, it seems to me that E is Federal Express or UPS, right? I want to get stuff from place to place, and you deal with it. And you're going to pick the right thing based on what I'm trying to ship. D seems to me to be allied movers. In other words, you know, I still need to move things, but I have a lot more involvement in selecting exactly, you know, what service I need, but still the fact of the matter is you're going to move it for me. And then the ones that came before is U-Haul, you know, that I have to go pick whatever truck I want and, in fact, drive it and deal with, you know, moving the stuff. So I guess implicitly what I'm saying is there is a level of service that I crossed from the earlier examples to D and E where that makes me think that it is more of a service contract than a lease, that I'm so particularly focused on the trucks. I have crossed the line that is not my primary concern. My primary concern now is moving things.
So in D, and I understand you don't want to change the facts, but let's just think for a second. If you change the facts to indicate that you have an arrangement with a freight supplier, however, you're not precluded going to CSX or whoever as well to move the freight, would you come up with a different conclusion?
I'm sorry, I don't understand what you changed.
What I changed was I introduced the fact that instead of using freight supplier to move those cars, you could hire another carrier to move those cars.
That would just...
Yeah.
It would change.
I'm struggling with the Allied Movers example because I'm not sure it's exactly the same. When I hired Allied Movers, I don't keep the moving truck when my stuff's not being moved. And that was a key distinction for me.
I questioned how realistic that was in this example.
Well, I actually think that can be plenty realistic. I mean, if you're in a manufacturing plant, you're loading it up and you're trying to get it to your final destination, you could just be loading up the rail car in your facility,
right,
waiting for the time it's full, and then move it, as opposed to an Allied Movers when, you know, it's just in time.
Yeah.
However, that doesn't change
doesn't matter.
My analysis. I kind of agreed with the analysis that you had, and that I would have that I thought of D. Notwithstanding Kevin's point that it could be just restored, but assuming that it was to transport, that was a service. And D crossed the line to me, and E was obviously a service.
So are we split? I wasn't really counting. Was the staff counting?
Yeah, 3-2.
Where's Larry?
Yeah, I'm with Tom.
Okay. So how do you draw the distinction? Because where are you in the cable box? So you're serving a cable box, right?
I would introduce a magnitude, you know, criteria, because the cable box is just incidental.
And that's what I said. This is a cable box circumstance for me, but for cable box, it's really incidental to the service. And I was talking, I'm judging perhaps, and I don't know all the facts here, but it seems to me 10 times $50,000 or $500,000 is not an incidental.
The other difference between the cable boxes, I would never buy a cable box because it has no alternative use, whereas these rail cars, to Kevin's point, are used for storage.
Okay.
Yeah, I inventory quite a few.
On the incidental part of the cable box, is it purely on the value or is it on the ability to obtain the service?
Or on the fact that the customer has no say. You take this box if you want my service.
But I think in D there is a choice that you have here. You could contract to do E.
You could contract to do E if I only wanted transportation services. You don't have to package it at D. In a cable company, I don't think you have a choice. And I think it is incidental in terms of materiality of the total services and the value to the lessor and to the lessee.
So when my contract is I don't have a choice, if it's a really big asset, I get a different answer than if it's a really small asset. That's why I don't understand your point about it. I don't have a choice in the cable box. I have no choice. I don't want the cable box, but I've got to have the cable box.
Yeah, I'm saying there's no choice. I'm saying in the rail cars there's a choice.
No, not in the fact pattern of D. There is no choice. I must hire the freight supplier to drive it.
No, I could hire the freight supplier like E and still get the transportation services. I can't hire the cable company and get the services without the cable box.
Without leasing. Can you go to a competitor of the cable box, like DirecTV, and maybe not have to pay the same thing?
Not that I'm aware of. And they're also programmed for the cable box services.
Okay, I think we're wandering.
Yeah, inversion.
The reason is I don't understand the distinction that Tom and Larry are making between this and that, other than the size of the fixed asset. So that's what I was trying to dig in.
It's not just, you keep ignoring this fact. It's the fact that there is a use of the rail car besides just transporting goods.
Okay.
And I want X number of rail cars on my premises.
Okay. That's not Tom's point. I understand your point. Tom's point is about, I hear Tom saying it's about the value of the hard asset.
I'm like Larry, more that it's a lease because of other factors here than the cable box. But if we wanted to make it just like the cable box, I think some of the decision we're going to make the cable box work versus this is whether it is sort of an immaterial asset relative to the total services.
Okay.
I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that. Stephen, anybody over there?
Stephen, I had a comment.
Okay. When you're ready. Pat first and then Warren.
As I was listening to the conversation the FASB is having, the thought I've had on this, and I've shared with David on numerous occasions and others, is unrelated to, I think, the very point that Russ made. The size, you can go down one of two paths, I think, here. And you can eliminate the question of the size and how predominant, you know, one element of the contract arrangement is by establishing a principle that would say, to the extent that the customer lessee is not managing, manipulating, using, employing its resources for the use of the underlying thing, it's not a lease. So, for example, I could be very comfortable in treating the arrangement where I'm receiving television or video signal services through a cable box or a dish on my roof, and calling that entire arrangement a service because I, the customer, lessee, am not doing anything with that box. It's just sitting, on top of my television or the example of a router and receiving internet services. It's just sitting on the wall. I'm not doing anything with it. I'm not employing my employees in its application. Likewise, if I'm dealing with a railroad car, okay, in the context, or even an airplane, in the context of an arrangement where, again, the lessor takes away all the discretion around how the underlying thing is used, and in fact, they're using it to provide its intended functionality, not my employees and not my resources, then I could call them services. Another path we can go down is the path that, as we've talked about here, which is to try to unbundle the arrangement and say what elements are predominantly service components, what elements are, you know, the right to use the underlying thing. And we could use, various criteria to do that and then account for them separately. But I see that as two distinct types of approaches to this. I think the former one, frankly, is more efficient and perhaps less complex. Because I know when I'm using my employees and when I'm manipulating the thing, you know, and when somebody else is doing that for me. So.
Okay, last comment, Warren, then we'll go on to the next example.
Yeah, just very quickly, Steve. I think we've actually focused in on a very important issue in terms of trying to make this split. And I think example D and the cable transmission box are particularly good examples in testing the broad approach I think we're trying to develop. In essence, what we're trying to say in these circumstances, and I think I'm agreeing with Tom and Larry, we're trying to determine what is the asset from which we're deriving the principal economic benefits in this transaction. And I think it's a matter of judgment, and I think it does come down to a question of scale or size. If you look at example D, the economic benefits that we're deriving is the transportation of goods from point A to point B. And clearly, the freight cars are a substantive element of the derivation of those benefits. If you look at the cable transmission box circumstance, then by any measure, the box itself is incidental to the receipt of the entertainment services, which are the economic benefits that are being derived in that transaction. I'm not sure that we're going to do much better than that, but maybe the staff, having heard our discussions, will be able to improve on it. But it seems to me that is trying to get to the heart of what it is that we're trying to identify in these difficult sorts of examples.
Okay, I think we're all getting to different answers for slightly different reasons, but I guess the staff kind of expected that that was going to be the case. Should we move on to the next one?
Okay.
And try and wrap up at the end?
Yes. Example twos, we're going to do both of them together. I think what we're testing in these two examples for the telephone communication cable is that, do you think an asset can be componentized? And if so, how? And the other thing is, what if in one scenario, the original starting pattern, there isn't much maintenance required in to maintain the telephone cable, but the second one, there is more maintenance required. Would that change the factors that you would decide on whether something meets the specified asset criteria or the control criteria? So I pass it on to the board.
Okay, Leslie, do you want to go first?
Question. Would the agreements typically be this specific? Or did we just contrive the example to make the points?
They can be. That's very.
What did you say, Leslie? I didn't catch that.
I was just curious if the agreements would typically be this specific or whether we had contrived this fact pattern just to make the points.
Well, from my experience, these are examples of actual transactions, and they go even further than the examples you've been given here to the passage of information within a single strand, and that being, if you like, componentized.
Okay, thank you.
So they're real examples, there's no doubt about that.
Okay, thank you.
I thought these were really good examples because it challenges me when I start thinking about fiber optic cable versus it changes completely the floors of a building, that you'd end up having half the building identified floors and you had access to all of it. And clearly, if I thought about floors of a building, I would say it's a lease in both instances, even if there was significant maintenance that was embedded to be able to make that lease. And so once I started thinking of this as just another way of talking about real estate without making it cable fiber optics that are separately identified, that you have access to 50% and you know which floors they are or what strand it is, I found your conclusions that these are leases the right thing. It's just...
Yeah, I came to the same conclusion.
Well, I think the
Larry,
first
what did
one
you
is
say?
Only... I came to the same conclusion.
Okay, thank
I
you.
Found the first one to be a lease. The second one I struggled with it being a lease because I wondered about control. You don't necessarily, and I think it's a little different than the real estate lease you're talking about, Tom. I would have said in the first one it'd be clear, you know, you get 4-1, I get 4-2. And the second one is you get half of the combination of 4-1 and 4-2. But we don't know who's going to get it. We don't know, you know, we're going to show up any time, and someone's going to be and say, okay, Tom, you get 4-2 today. Okay, Brett, you get 4-1. Tomorrow's could switch. We don't know, and we don't care. So I struggled in the 50% about the control notion. And where I ended up being is that it was more of a service, not a lease.
But why did you care? Why were you okay with the substitution of the rail cars, then? You didn't care about that. So, I mean,
depends on what you view. It's your homogeneous, right?
Yeah.
Isn't this the same thing?
Could be a timeshare or what's another example?
Hotel rooms. I mean,
it's one of the things that I was struggling with to this point isn't one of the aspects of control the ability to restrict others from using that? And so that when I was trying to apply that one, I had a hard time. I was rusted in the 50%. I don't know which 50%.
But are you restricting just 50%, or are you restricting a specific spot in that?
Well, right. I mean, it's you know, Russell's example is, this is, I don't know if they have these around the world, Regis office space where you just go in, you don't know where it's going to be.
But you're going
to
get one.
You've got a modular desk, and it could be the second floor, it could be the first floor, and you don't know where it's going to be.
Is that a lease? I think it's a lease.
You do?
Well, I do. Because I have a contract with them for an office space for a year, and I'm going to pay them a certain amount. And I show up, and they give me an office.
The specified asset is. Well, I guess the specified asset is just going to
space
be a space. You just don't know which one.
Now, if I did that on a daily basis, then I'd have some cost-benefit questions about whether I need to account for that as a lease.
I mean, if we all agree that since we're staying at the same hotel when we visit the ISB the whole time, that we contracted for a year ahead of time, that we always have a room in that hotel for the specified week in the month for that time period, for a year's time, would we view that as a lease?
It's a timeshare, let's say.
Yeah. I think we would. I don't know how that's different than B. I've got access to a space.
It's a slippery slope, though, because I know where Russ is going to go next. Is if I'm, you know, if I'm taking, you know, 100% of the capacity of a plant, we tend to think, okay, that's a lease. If I'm taking 4% of the capacity of the plant, is that a lease? That's the slippery slope that Russ is concerned about when we start talking about the capacity as being leased versus the physical.
About 75% of the
75%. And where do you draw the line as it becomes a lease or not? And so that's Russ's concern, I think.
I just wanted to bring it into a different asset set because it gives you a different view of things.
That is helpful, but I'm still trying to figure out the restricting others' access and how you apply the control notion when you talk about a component. And maybe it is similar to the substitution. It's the very extreme end of substitution. It's pure substitution. But like I, you know, when it's one fiber optic cable and there's a certain amount of bandwidth in it, and I'm going to get some of it. I don't know which part of it. You can't restrict access to it.
But since Kevin's point, I mean, you are restricting access. I mean, that lessor cannot lease out. So if you have a lease for an arrangement for 50% of it, that lessor cannot you know, contract with Tom for 75% of it.
I think to your point, it's like the pure substitution. I don't know which 50% is going to be and or when. Yeah.
Well, I think the question really is, can you restrict access? And two, Leslie and I are sharing this thing 50-50, okay? I send 60% capacity over the line. Is there a way to prevent me from sending another 10 to protect her 50? I don't know. I would suspect that's fact that it would be very difficult to restrict me from sending too much.
Well, is it 50% in a day? Is it 50% over a year? So,
correct.
So maybe you could use 100% today, and then Leslie use 100% tomorrow. Well, that's 50% for 2 days.
Well, then is it?
How's it defined? What's 50% is the whole time period?
And do you really, is that really control, or is that really a specified asset? You know, are you buying a service?
That's a good question. So.
And that's not the same as necessarily real estate.
Over to you, Steve.
Thanks, Leslie. I've actually got a question before we start, and that is, it seems to me that when you go to the alternative fact pattern, you're changing two things. You're making it one fiber optic cable, and you're adding in the additional services. So I'm comfortable with componentizing and thinking of a lease as being a component of an asset. I struggle a little bit with perhaps one fiber optic cable, but I probably get there. But it's the additional services and the other things that are going on in that case. So was it intentional to link the two, or are you just building two additional things?
When we're thinking through this one, and it's mentioned a little bit there, yeah, there is obviously the component question that we've discussed. But secondly, it was a question when you begin, if you get through the hurdle of saying, okay, I can have an asset here at a capacity component level, we then started thinking through how you'd go about demonstrating control at that level and whether in demonstrated control you looked purely at your 50% capacity or whether you were really having to go up to the entire physical asset. And I think we've got some words in sort of paragraph 39 on the paper that talk a little bit about how you might start thinking about control in this situation, talking a little bit about that preventing the access. And I think one of the things here to think through is just, okay, if we, and Mark touched on it, I think, a little bit there, and maybe Tom as well, if you get over that hurdle of having a component, how does that impact how you look at control here and whether you can control that component? Okay.
Can I make a comment, Steve? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, coming next, Warren. Gregory?
Now, if we look at this issue purely from the specificity point of view, I have no problem to, you know, use the capacity notion rather than you must use, specify which lines, A or B, for me, not problem, not major problem. But generally, for such kind of service, contract, I will classify them as a service. The reason is, up to now, we mainly concentrate on the specificity of the assets itself, but we already also touch another area is that is the level of service. And I will imagine, now let's assume the rental is made of three parts, basically the cost of the asset, interest and the service. And in this case, I will assume, the relative value of the cable itself is not so high. And it is a specialized industry with tight regulatory regimes. And I would assume the rental may be, the only 10% of the fabric made of any material. And the others are different kind of charges. So in terms of, as I said, asset specificity, I would generally accept capacity rather than you must specify A or B. But for such kind of contract, our journalists regard it as a service rather than a lease. Unless you can split, it's a totally different story.
Okay, thanks, Ray Grove. Warren?
I don't have any doubts at all that that these are leases. The contracts that I've seen clearly specify what the asset is. It's the capacity that's provided by the fibre optic cable. Whether that's provided as a single cable itself or whether it's the information traffic or the flow of information within a single fibre, it's very clear that the lessee has the right to transmit traffic using that capacity, and no one else has that right, and they can deny or regulate the access of others to it. I've often seen in the agreements that they can actually sublet that to somebody else. So I don't have any doubts at all from what I've seen that there are specified assets in these cases. The fact that there are services provided in insignificant or significant amounts is beside the point, and I think it comes back to what Kevin said before. These are other services that are provided, and the model that we developed in the ED would require us to account for those separately. So I actually think this is very clear cut in both cases.
Could I go? I don't agree with Warren.
Go ahead, Joe.
The trouble I had with the, once you split it up 50-50, it seemed that how far could you go? And so I have cable services for internet. There's probably 10 million customers using the service I have. They've locked into a price for a couple of years. I don't think I have a lease. Clearly, I've got a right to some percentage. They're making this available to me. They haven't specified it. But also, the trouble I had with the second one on exclusive use, I'm not sure what that means, because I don't think you can divide the 50 up and say, there's your 50, here's the others. I think what it means is I can't add a third person. But it didn't seem to me that I had a particular asset. So I view these as services.
Can I just jump in on here, John? It's always difficult with these fact patterns to be as clear as we can, but I think the difference is if you're signing on to some internet service provider, I notice how much slower it gets at about 7 o'clock at night, because even though I've got access to it, I haven't got specified capacity. And in this particular case, it was supposed to be clear that I have half the capacity. Nobody can slow me down.
I would bet you that when the other guy's not using his 50, it's probably faster.
John, that's not the case with these contracts. They specify communication capacity. You have the right to deliver traffic down the line. No one else has. It's actually componentized, bifurcated, if you like. You can regulate the use of it. And it's, you know,
could they do this with 5 customers, 10 customers? Where do we stop?
Well, it stops at the capacity of the cable, and these things have got a huge capacity. What's the problem with a big number versus a small number? If it's a separately identifiable asset, it has capacity. You are the only one that can actually deliver traffic on it. Why would you deny that that's a specified asset? I just don't understand that.
I just think I'm sharing that with someone else.
But you don't, John. You don't share the actual capacity that's been allocated to you. No one else can actually deliver traffic along that line.
I hear what you're saying. I don't agree. We can hear from others.
Okay, who's going to resolve the John Warren difference?
Can I just jump in?
Paul just said that he agrees with John.
Doesn't make him right.
We're done.
And now Pat agrees with Warren. So we're
No. That was
oh, that's Daryl.
It was Daryl. Okay. Yeah. I'm in
John's camp, in the first scenario, I'd call that a lease. The second scenario, I'd call that a service arrangement. I think it comes back to, again, you know, we're having difficulty. We have the unrestricted use of the underlying thing, and there's no other bells or whistles. That's clearly a lease. Where we're buying an arrangement for a certain function or activity where we don't, we're not involved, we're totally passive, that's a service. And all these arrangements that have elements of both are the things that we're struggling with. And, you know, so that, in my mind, argues for not trying to quote one thing or the other. Unless we want to have a principle that says determine what predominates, okay, that's one way to go, or don't even try to determine what predominates, always identify the components and account for them separately. Now, the danger, obviously, of that is that you could end up accounting for insignificant or incidental, I think a term that has been thrown around, underlying things that you might not want to capitalize. And I agree that's a downside risk of using the bifurcation approach. So I would say that clearly when things are incidental, when the underlying things are incidental, then you could probably throw that into the service category. And the reason why I feel comfortable with that is, again, typically in those arrangements, you're not using or manipulating or managing, you know, the underlying thing. It's the service that predominates. So,
but Pat, what if the only difference was simply that it's one fiber and you have exclusive use of one fiber versus 50% capacity of one fiber? I take it that you're sort of thinking of the last paragraph in this modified fact pattern, but do you think you can componentize a single fiber and take your capacity to be a lease?
I think if there was nothing else that you were receiving from the lessor supplier, yeah. But because in the context of information and communication technology, you are dependent upon that lessor supplier for the real value and sizzle in the arrangement, which is the signal, then I would always probably come back to calling that a service, even though there's an underlying thing involved in the delivery of that service. See, part of our challenge here, we're making this more difficult for ourselves than we want, in that if we were willing to call, or capitalize, I should say, if we were willing to capitalize all arrangements involving assets that are identified in IAS 16 or in topic, whatever it is, 340 in U.S. GAAP, all those arrangements that have bundled services with them, if we were going to capitalize the whole arrangement, all this goes away, all this problem. But we don't want to go that far. And so we're making this more challenging because we want to have the service component off balance sheet. And, you know, I think then we have to make some practical decisions. And I think I would err on keeping it simple rather than introducing criteria that's going to make it more complex.
Okay, we haven't got long left. Tatsumi?
Thank you very much. I'm just waiting for my turn. So then, obviously, the example 2 in page 13, I think it's a lease. And examples in on paragraph 14. So there are two aspects Stephen has already pointed out. If the maintenance service is not significant, I think that the separation in the 50% will not change any decisions which I made in a basic example, I think. But I have a trouble with the analysis in paragraph 38 and 39. So 38 says, I think, just fiber A depends upon significant outgoing service provided by telco that company A does not control. I think that the existence of maintenance is, I don't think it's a decision factor, I think. If we think in that way, the car leases with maintenance leases will not be separated, will not be treated as lease because the existence of the maintenance, I think. Because the maintenance service might be the significant for the car to run. In that case, say car lease with maintenance will not be treated as lease. I don't think it's right answer. And I would like to know the meaning of the maintenance services in here. If the, say, maintenance services related to the processing of the data transfer, it might be substantial in nature, but say, just to keep the fiber cable itself, make it clean or something, and it's not, it seems ancillary. So in that case, I think the existence of maintenance service will not dictate the nature of the treatment. So I think that in this case, I can't make any decisions because the nature of the significant ongoing maintenance or service is not clearly articulated in here. And so, and also that the one more thing is, I forget it, so just I finish here.
And probably was going to be the best bit. PK?
Yeah, I just wanted to compare and contrast this example with the IT outsourcing industry because I think the issues that are present here are also present in that fact pattern. Like Leslie, I was curious where on the earth do you find a situation where somebody rents a strand A of a fiber and keeps the maintenance. These issues are very pertinent that I'm aware of is in the when the fiber optic was laid under the railroads in the United States or on the deep ocean, many telecom companies rented those fiber across the transatlantic or transpacific or under the railroads. In almost all the contracts, the maintenance of the fiber is on the companies like Level 3 or other companies. So I feel what people are really renting here is the data transmission and uninterrupted supply of the data transmission from point A to point B. So for me, if you really have a situation like a pattern one, yeah, that's a lease. But more often than not, it is a pattern where somebody is renting a strand so that he gets an uninterrupted supply of service to transfer data from point A to point B. So in fact, pattern two, because of the maintenance is maintained by the fiber optic company, I would think it's a service because that is the essential part. He is renting to move data from A to B and with uninterrupted power supply. So I think that's where I end.
Well, PK's conclusion was also my conclusion. So, staff, where does this leave you?
We're going to reflect back what the boards have decided, particularly on examples 1C and examples 2, and we'll come back with hopefully with a more fully developed paper at the February board meeting. But that's all I can that's all we can promise, unless David says otherwise.
Steve, can I add a comment, Steve?
Please.
It's just in the context of comments made by John and Paul, probably PK. I think it's going to be important that we are consistent in the application of the concepts that we're articulating in the standard. And the essential concept in terms of what we've been discussing tonight, my time, afternoon, morning, your time, is whether there is a specified asset to which you have a right of use. And what I've heard in relation to traffic on fibre optic cables, I think people are uncomfortable with being able to componentise physical assets into something that's intangible. To my mind, that doesn't detract at all from the application of those basic concepts. Might not be used to that notion, but tangible or intangible, the question is, do you have a specified asset? Do you have a right of use? Are you able to enjoy benefits, deny or regulate the access of others to those benefits? If the staff don't do that, then I'm not sure what we're going to see when you come back with another draft or another paper.
Okay, well, I certainly think we need clarity. I could live with a margin of variation in this, what is a lease, what is a service, but I think my key concern is that whatever we end up with it is very clear and operational. But I can't go outside that margin. Leslie, any final things you want to add from your end?
Just as a matter of clarification, I thought I heard Lily say that what we need more analysis on is 1C as in cat, but it seemed to me that D as in dog was even more murky. So maybe I misheard.
You're right. I missed out 1D. Apologize.
Okay, no problem. Anything else here? Okay. We're good.
Okay, well, I hope you will make it home okay. Is that the ice storm still blowing?
Yes, we hear we have about a five-hour window before it starts again. So we will let you know the contingency plan for tomorrow.
Okay, very good.
And actually, for anyone listening, that will be posted on our website.
All right, thanks, then. Bye. Thanks, Warren. Thanks,
bye.
Everybody on the phone.
Goodbye.
Thank you. Thanks, staff. Well done.
Yeah, see you tomorrow.
Thanks, guys.